The traffic on 16th Street was stop-start heavy, frustration on every block, past Juniper Street, and Iris, and Hemlock, and Holly, and Geranium, and Floral, then past Walter Reed, with the park green and serene on the right. The driver was no longer a bullet. He was shrapnel at best, subject to aerodynamic forces, jinking right and left between the lanes to win some fractional advantage on the dead straight road. A southern town built for horses and buggies, perspiring gentlemen in hats and vests, flicking mosquitoes away, now sclerotic with jammed vehicles, superheated air shimmering above their hoods, expensive paint winking in the sun. He still had a long way to go. He was going to be late. Reacher walked the corridors until he smelled an office with a coffee machine going. He ducked in and helped himself to a cup, practicing a sergeant's manner, on the surface, quiet and deferential, with ramrod competence showing underneath. But the office was empty, so his acting was wasted, and the coffee was burnt and stewed. Buddy took it with him anyway in one hand, the sheaf of documents in the other, all the way back to Cornelius Christopher's office. Christopher said, "You look the part." Reacher said, "Do I? Your file says you're pretty good with a long gun." "I do my best." "You could have been a real sniper." "Too much waiting around. Too much mud. The best snipers are always country boys." "And you're a city boy." "I'm a nowhere boy. I grew up on Marine bases." "Yet you joined the Army?" "I'm, naturally contrary." "Did you finish your reading?" "Not yet." "We checked for financial irregularities," Christopher said, "or financial excesses, I suppose, but they're all living within their means. Appropriate accommodations, four-cylinder cars, good clothes but small wardrobes, modest jewelry, no vacations, not that they'd take a vacation anyway, not fast-track people, not if they want to be chief of staff one day or a defense industry lobbyist." Reacher put the 30-year-old Lieutenant Colonel Christine Richardson to the bottom of the pile and started in on the second of the women, 29 years old and a mere major, name of Bryony Walker, the daughter of a retired naval officer, brought up mostly in Seattle and San Diego, public elementary school, public high school, valedictorian, West Point. Christopher said, "I hope it's not her." Reacher said, "Why?" "Well, the naval connection." "You like the Navy?" "Not much, but it's still a military family." The third candidate was another 30-year-old light colonel, this one called Darwin DeWitt. And right there, Reacher knew she wasn't the product of a military family, not with a name like that. In fact, she was the daughter of a Houston businessman who owned about 100 dent repair franchises. Private education all the way. Softball star, West Point. The fourth was Alice Vaz, age 30, lieutenant colonel, granddaughter of another lieutenant colonel, except this one had been called Mikhail Vasilievich, and he had been lieutenant colonel in the Red Army, a Soviet. His son, Alice's father, had gotten out of Hungary just in time, with a pregnant wife, and Alice had been born in the United States, a citizen, California, public elementary, public high, West Point.
"Notice anything definitive?" Christopher asked.
Reacher said, "Their names are perfectly alphabetical. Alice, Bryony, Christine, and Darwin."
"Okay, apart from that,
two of them are rich girls. What does that do to your money motive?"
"Maybe taking money is a habit with rich people. Maybe that's how they get rich in the first place. Did you notice anything else?"
"No."
"Neither did we."
The woman with the fanny pack and the headband was on New Hampshire Avenue, gunning hard up the rise, the hubbub of DuPont Circle already visible in the haze ahead. She was up two greens on the crosswalks, and she could see it already, reaching the Capitol steps, slamming her hand on her wrist to stop the watch, gasping for air, once, twice, bent over, hands on knees, then raising her head, then bringing her arm up slowly and blinking the sweat from her eyes and focusing on the pale LCD readout and seeing the magic numbers 29-something. She could do it. She hammered on, striding short because of the gradient, really breathing, really hurting, but still moving well. The man in the car was still on 16th Street. He had the air on high, but even so he could feel sweat on his back, vinyl upholstery, and a four-cylinder motor with no power to spare for a big compressor. He was just past Harvard Street, getting to where young and rent-strapped aides were forced to live. No cars for them. They were walking to work, right alongside him, about the same speed. He watched one, a girl, in pantyhose despite the heat, the nylon scissoring fast, ugly white athletic sneakers on her feet, with tube socks, her dress shoes no doubt in the big bag she was carrying, along with briefing papers and position papers and talking points, maybe with a makeup kit, hoping against hope everyone else would be busy and she would get to go on the television news for a comment. There were male versions, too, dressed out of a Brooks Brothers sale, heads high, striding out. Every block brought more of them, twos and threes, until both sidewalks were full of them, all heading the same way, power walking, almost an army, an unstoppable force, clean living and idealistic young people setting out to do good for their country. They were going to get to work before him. The traffic was awful. The transcript showed that the second pre-committee hearing had picked up more or less exactly where the first had left off, solidly on the safe ground of technical discussions, about minutiae like actions and stocks and betting and triggers and scopes. It was as if a collective but unspoken agreement had been reached to avoid unpleasant issues and to run out the clock with the kind of things shooters like to talk about. The four liaison women poked and prodded and drew the men out endlessly, going over things again and again, refining details until Reacher could practically see the new weapon in his mind's eye. Three of them were doing it just to keep the ball rolling, and the fourth was lapping it all up, no doubt picturing her contact in a foreign boardroom, reading her facts, unable to believe the precision of the specification he was being handed. Who was the fourth? Christine Richardson and Darwin DeWitt did most of the talking. The transcript looked like a movie screenplay where CR and DD were the big stars. They each got plenty of ink, but their approaches were different. Richardson was rah-rah for the Army, every question and every point laying a kind of guilt trip on the politicians for not rushing to make the world a safer place. DeWitt showed more concern for the congressional point of view. She was almost a fifth skeptic. Devil's advocate, maybe, or perhaps her sympathies genuinely lay elsewhere. Perhaps her Houston dent repair upbringing had made her a fiscal conservative. But wherever she was coming from, she laid bare the details of the secret spec as much as anyone. Bryony Walker and Alice Vaz said less. Walker was all about accuracy, the naval family. She wanted the rifle to be like the guns on her daddy's ships, artillery instruments, infallible when properly aimed. And she was weirdly interested in the end results. She asked about headshots and chest shots, about how it felt to wait while the bullet flew, about what they saw through the scope afterwards. The effect was almost pornographic.